Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Gopi Janavalabha Giri Varadhari. Jayo Gopi Janavalabha Giri Varadhari. Yashoda Nandana Brajo Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Brajo Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Vishwapad Paramahamsa Parvacharya Shruti Shruti Shishima Desi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Vishwapad Paramahamsa Parvacharya Shruti Shruti Shishima Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj Ki Jai. Ananta Goti Vaishnavarinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. ISKCON BPT Founder Acharya Hisingare Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Prem Sakaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Gangamai Munamai Ki Jai. Tulasi Devi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the Sambhuli devotees, all glories to Sambhuli devotees, all glories to Sambhuli devotees, all glories to Shishi, Guru, and Gauranga. Jayo Jayo Shri Chaitanya Jayo Nityananda. Jayo Advaita Chandra Jayo Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jayo Jayo Shri Chaitanya Jayo Nityananda. Jayo Advaita Chandra Jayo Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jayo Jayo Shri Chaitanya Jayo Nityananda. Jayo Advaita Chandra Jayo Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna. So we are continuing study of Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is chapter 23, and today we will cover text 14, 15, and 16. So 14 and 15 is quite long. It is actually a famous verse. I'm going to just read myself, and then text number 16 we will chant together. Adau shraddha tatha sadhu sangota bhajana kriya tato anartha nivritti syat tato nishta ruchitatam atta saktis tato bhavas tato prema bhidanchati sadakanam ayam premna pradurbhave bhavet kramam. Translation. In the beginning, there must be faith. Then one becomes interested in associating with pure devotees. Thereafter, one is initiated by the spiritual master and executes the regulative principles under his orders. Thus, one is freed from all unwanted habits and becomes firmly fixed in devotional service. Thereafter, one develops taste and attachment. This is the way of sadhana bhakti, the execution of devotional service according to the regulative principles. Gradually, emotions intensify, and finally, there is an awakening of love. This is the gradual development of love of Godhead for the devotee interested in Krishna consciousness. And then we have text number 16. I will read line by line, and then if you could please respond. Satam prasangam mama virya samvidam bhavanti hrit karna rasayana katam taj joshnad ashu apavarga vartmanim Shradharatir Bhaktir Anukramishyati. Satam Prasangam Mamma Virya Samvidam. Bhavanti Hrit Karnara Sayana Katam. Ta Joshnadashu Apavarga Vartmani. Shradharatir Bhaktir Anukramishyati. Please chant. Satam prasangam mama virya samvidam bhavanti hrit karna rasayana katam tajoshnadashvapa bharga vartmani. Shradharatir Bhaktir Anukramishyati. Satam prasangam mama virya samvidam. Bhavanti hrit karna rasayana katam. Tajoshnadashva pavarga vartmani. Shradharatir Bhaktir Anukramishyati. Okay, so translation. Satam, of the devotees, prasangat, by the intimate association, mama, of me, virya samvidam, talks full of spiritual potency, bhavanti, appear, hrit, to the heart, karnam, and to the ears, rasayanam, a source of sweetness, katam, talks, tat, of them, yoshanat, from proper cultivation, ashu, quickly, apavargam, of liberation, vartmani, on the path, shradam, faith, rati, attraction, bhakti, love, anukramishyati, will follow one after another. Translation: the spiritually powerful message of Godhead can be properly discussed only in society of devotees, and it is greatly pleasing to hear in that association. If one hears from devotees, the way of transcendental experience quickly opens, and gradually one attains firm faith that in due course develops into attraction and devotion. Om Jnana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Trubhishya Kripa Sinubevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we are continuing studying of the chapter 23, in which Lord Chaitanya is instructing Sanatana Goswami. And in the beginning of that chapter, we find basically description which is saying that Mahaprabhu is describing the symptoms of emotion and love awakening of one's original loving relationship with the Lord, as well as the characteristics of devotee who has actually attained that stage. So Mahaprabhu is telling to Sanatan, he's saying, now hear, O Sanatan, about the result of devotional service, which is love of Godhead, life's ultimate goal. One who hears this description will be enlightened in the transcendental mellows of devotional service. So one will be enlightened by listening and studying this transcendental narration. So the first verse that we were actually reciting this morning, text 14 and 15, basically describes these nine stages of progress in the path of bhakti. And Prabhupada is saying, in the beginning there must be faith. Faith is the kind of like fundamental principle on which everything else is built, and from which everything else later kind of comes to fruition. So if we ask ourselves what exactly faith is, and once achieved, does it stay permanently there? Could it be lost? Could it be diminished? Or is it kind of like status quo? What do you think? Thank you, Mother Aragataka. That is so true. Basically, we find that even there is that example, Bharat Maharaj, he was on the stage of Bhava, and even on such high elevated state of spiritual consciousness, we find that essentially his devotion was diverted to the little deer, which was kind of hanging around his ashram, and he was basically in his last moments of life more focused on deer, and later on, as we know, took birth as a deer. So that is kind of cautionary story for all of us, that we shouldn't think that, oh, I've been practicing Krishna consciousness for a number of years, I'm safe. No, Maya is very, very powerful. And actually, till one reaches final stage of prema bhakti, there is still possibility of one slipping down and being influenced by the illusory energy. So I've been kind of researching a lot this topic of fate, and there is a lot of discussion you can find online. And one thing that caught my attention is one particular article that was written by Christian theologian. And he describes essentially that fate has two potential aspects or features. One is dynamic and one is static. And he explains that the true fate is actually dynamic in the nature. And his reasoning is like this. He's saying, fate is dynamic, not static. It is a journey that grows, changes, and is expressed through action over time, rather than a fixed state of belief. This dynamic nature is shaped by personal and collective experiences, as well as new information, and requires, this is one thing I like very much, he's saying, it requires active participation and consistent application. So the faith is, the true faith is, it's an ongoing journey. It requires action. It changes with experiences, and it involves constant effort. So it's not something, you know, like you graduate from high school, you get your diploma, and I'm done. No, faith requires constant endeavor. So as I was preparing for the class, basically, you'll see in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada is saying that this verse number 16 is actually a quotation from Bhagavatam. So normally I kind of copy my verses in a Word document, and then I put my notes and so on. So initially I put all my verses together, and I was planning to continue following day. And then when I came back, I was looking, actually I was reading one of the verses, and I was thinking, where this came from? Like, I was kind of bewildered. And later on I realized verse number 16, it is in Bhagavatam, and it's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita again, but Prabhupada translates it slightly differently. If you look word by word, and I mean, the essence of the verse is the same, no doubt about it, but Prabhupada is using slightly different words to emphasize his point. So I was curious about that. Obviously, Prabhupada was aware that it's the same verse, otherwise he wouldn't put the quotation and say, this is the verse from Bhagavatam. So he was clearly aware it's the same verse, But rather than copying, you know, what he previously translated, he actually translated again with a slightly different twist to it. So I was curious about that, and nowadays you can find everything on internet. So I was curious, when did Third Canto get translated? Third Canto was translated in 1970. When did CC was translated and published? That was in 1974. So 4 years later. So I compared the two. I was curious, what did Prabhupada translate differently? And there is two things that stood out to me. Basically, the first thing Prabhupada is translating differently this time in 1974, he is saying that Krishna conscious topics can be properly discussed only in society of devotees. Only in society of devotees. Where previously he was saying in society, basically in association of devotees, those topics are very pleasing to hear. But this time he's saying that they can be properly discussed and understood only in the association of devotees. And then the other thing that is different, he's saying that if one hears from devotees the way of transcendental experience quickly opens. So that word experience wasn't there before. So I was kind of trying to meditate and think about these things. And one thing that I'm coming to conclusion that Prabhupada obviously wanted to point out the importance of staying in association of devotees. And I don't know exactly the circumstances, but I assume that probably by 1974 some of the his disciples may have left, is that right? Or had some difficulties. So he's specifically using this instance to not only translate, but actually provide the instruction for us that we should be very careful to always remain in association with devotees and hearing in such company that he's saying that the way of transcendental experience quickly opens. So that's very encouraging. You know, if you think like, man, I have to wait like, you know, five lifetimes to to experience any feeling, you know, that wouldn't be very encouraging. But Prabhupada is saying, no, just hear attentively in association with devotees and the way of transcendental experience will quickly open to you. So very important. So the other thing we also can reflect that this verse number 16, so it is from Bhagavatam, and who is actually speaking that verse? It was actually Kapiladev. Lord Kapiladev is instructing his mother. And as we know, Devahuti was no ordinary person. First, she is the daughter of Swayambhu Manu. Her brothers are Priyavrata and Uttanapad. So she's coming from very, very, very elevated family line. And then she's married, you know, not just to anybody, but to great sage Kardama Muni. So Devahuti had all the great qualities, spiritual and material. She was so beautiful, it's described that one time she was just playing with the ball on the roof of her palace. Previously, the kings, they would very carefully take care of their daughters. You know, they would be hidden from the public eye. So Devahuti, in her youth, she was just playing on the roof of her palace with the ball, and one of the Gandharvas, he was flying by, and he fell out of his plane just by seeing her beauty. he was so bewildered. So Devahuti has, she has all the great qualities. But still, we find that after she was basically all the mother of nine daughters, and Kardama Muni was ready to leave for the forest, she's approaching him and telling him, "My dear Prabhu, you fulfilled all your promises to me. However, one thing you have not done yet." So she's saying, "My Lord, you have fulfilled all the promises you gave me, yet because I'm your surrendered soul, you should give me fearlessness too." Fearlessness. So I was thinking, like, I mean, what could Devahuti be afraid of? You know, she's coming from the great royal family, and her husband is Kardama Muni. You know, there was no government shutdown or no canceled flights or anything like that. Life is good. Still, she's praying for fearlessness. So intelligent. And then she's saying, basically, association for sense gratification is certainly the path of bondage, but the same type of association performed with saintly person leads to the path of liberation, even if performed without knowledge. So later on, when Kapiladeva was born, basically, she's praying to Lord Kapiladeva, and she's saying, "Your lordship is my only means of getting out of the darkest region of ignorance, because you are my transcendental eye, by which, by your mercy only, I have attained after many, many births." And Prabhupada is saying in the purport to this verse that this is very instructive, because it indicates the relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple. The disciple or conditioned soul is put into darkest region of ignorance and therefore is entangled in the material existence of sense gratification. So, one very important thing that Devahuti is also saying to Kapiladeva, she's saying, "I'm very sick of the disturbance caused by my material senses. For because of these sense disturbance, my Lord, I have fallen into the abyss of ignorance." So very interesting that a personality like Devahuti would be so, you know, such a strong opinion about the entanglement of this material world. And she's basically saying, "I'm tired of this material existence. My Lord, please, please enlighten me." And we can see that that is the actually first-class intelligence, that one is approaching the authority and learning by hearing. Prabhupada would sometimes say, you know, that is the first-class intelligence, learning by listening, by hearing from the authority. The second-class intelligence, of course, is that one has to go through experience and experience the pains of this material existence. And the third class is, of course, the one that even after suffering in the material world, still doesn't get it. A couple months ago, I was actually in Gainesville driving with my wife. And as we were waiting on a stoplight, and nowadays it's pretty common appearance, there was a homeless man. And typically they have a sign, you know, "Give me, you know, some money," or, you know, something. But this one had a different sign which caught my attention. The sign was saying, "Down and out." Down and out. And so I was thinking, like, gosh, like, first of all, how is it possible that in the richest country of the world, you know, there is actually so many homeless people? And this man, he wasn't really old. He was probably a few years younger than me. And he looked like an able-bodied person and, you know, definitely somebody that could do some work. But he was standing on the street and with his sign. Actually, later I realized he had a bunch of signs stuck behind him. So he would change according to, you know, his mood. But anyhow, this sign was saying down and out. And I was thinking, gosh, like, isn't that so, first of all, very sad, but also kind of like comical, that the conditioned soul in this material world is essentially like in a boxing match with material energy. And the conditioned soul is trying to enjoy, try to control, and of course it can't because it's not its constitutional position. So Maya just, you know, gives a big knockdown and he falls down and he keeps getting up and, continuously being kicked by the illusory energy. So the intelligent person, rather than trying to fight the illusory energy, would be much better to actually walk away from the boxing ring. Wouldn't that be logical? Rather than trying to compete with illusory energy. So spiritual master is kindly giving that opportunity. Kindly giving that opportunity after many, many lifetimes. He's coming to enlighten the jiva and he's saying, my dear living entity, please, you know, don't waste your time in this. You know, the odds are against you. Just walk away from this boxing match. You know, you don't need to be here. This is not your natural position. So anyhow, there's that famous verse which says, Yasya deve para bhaktir, yatha deve tata guru, tasyaite katkaita hiarta prakashante mahatmana. Only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the inputs of the Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. So, back to our verses. So, Lord Chaitanya is instructing Sanatan, but you may actually go back a little bit and reflect, how did that meeting take place? It wasn't that easy. And my point is that faith requires constant endeavor, which Sanatan Goswami and Rupa, they actually prove it with their own lives. So as we know from their example, basically, it is described that they were very prominent in the government of Nawab Hussein Shah. Sanatan was minister and Rupa was the treasurer. And they had very, very important roles in his government. Still, however, their natural inclination was to seek shelter of the Lord. And they wrote to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu several times, praying for his mercy and asking him to deliver them. And finally, Lord Chaitanya, at one point, on the pretext of going to Vrindavan, he basically said, I'm going to go through Northwest Bengal because my mother Sachi is there. I have two mothers. One is Mother Sachi and the other is Ganga Devi. So I need to visit both of them. And with that explanation, he wanted to travel that path. Of course, you could go more towards west than take a shorter path, but that was his reasoning. And later on it's described that he purposely actually wanted to meet Rupa and Sanatan, which were at that time residing in Ramakeli. So finally that meeting took place, and it is described that at that point he gave them initiation. And they were begging for his mercy to please free them from these material clutches. And Lord Chaitanya, he promised them, don't worry, soon you will be under my full protection and engaged in my service. So after that meeting, it is described basically they lost all of their enthusiasm to perform the government service. And they were just thinking how to join Lord Chaitanya. Rupa, he decided to pretty much immediately quit. He took all his wealth. It's described he, you know, took all the gold on the two boats and he distributed 50% to service of devotees and 25% to his relatives. And he kept only a small portion for his own emergencies. And basically, that way, he and his younger brother Anupam, they escaped. However, Sanatan, he was still there, and he didn't know what to do. And he was thinking, Nawab is very happy with me, with my service. He is pleased with me. Therefore, I have obligation, which is not good. So he was thinking, I have to do something to displease him. Then he will be more inclined to, you know, let me go. So one day he decided, basically, he didn't show up for the work or anything. He didn't go to the king's palace. Rather, he stayed home with excuse that he is sick. So Nawab Hussain Shah, he sent his royal physician to examine what is happening with Sanatan. Because he's like pretty much, he was running the entire country on behalf of the Nawab. Nawab was always busy conquering the surrounding states. But it was actually Sanatan who administered entire affairs in the kingdom. So the physician came and he actually found Sanatan discussing the Srimad Bhagavatam with, you know, Brahmanas. And he reported back, he's fine, but, you know, his home transformed into the temple now. He's just reciting Bhagavatam and, you know, discussing with Brahmins. And when Nawab heard that, he was really upset. So shortly after, he went himself and he confronted Sanatan. Why are you not showing up for your responsibilities? Like, you know, what is this? I depend on you. Actually, it was described that two of them, even though Nawab was Muslim, he loved Rupa and Sanatan so much, like he treated them so like brothers, because they were so exalted, so learned, and so intelligent that Nawab naturally had such a great respect for them. So when he saw that Rupa escaped and now even Sanatan is kind of not inclined to perform any of the services in his kingdom, he was very much in distress. And basically he asked Sanatan, I'm going to Orissa. He wanted to conquer the Orissa. You should come with me. And he was just trying to, you know, get Sanatan's company. But Sanatan said, you are going to inflict pain to the Supreme Lord because Jagannath is in Orissa. Therefore, I cannot accompany you. And Sanatan said, you know, please, you know, let me go. I'm resigning from my position. And Nawab was so upset and he basically ordered Sanatan to be arrested, to put him in a jail. Can you imagine that? So again, to our main topic for today, fate. Can you imagine what kind of fate is required when you are put in such condition? Like, you know, one moment you are prominent minister, the next day you are in a jail with, you know, shackles and, yeah. But Sanatan was not really affected with the change of, you know, circumstances. On the other hand, Rupa, he actually couldn't understand and what's happening. And he sent secretly a letter to Sanatan, and he told him, "My dear Sanatan, there's a news that Mahaprabhu is going to Vrindavan again. You should try to escape and join me in Anupama." And he said, "I have left 10,000 gold coins with the shopkeeper. Use that money to somehow get yourself free." So then it's described, when Sanatan received that message, he realized this is the moment needed for action. So he approached the jailkeeper and he said, "My dear jailkeeper," he said, "I know you're a very learned person in Quran," he said, "and you understand that actually helping the conditioned soul free itself is a great religious merit. So I am at the moment in a great trouble. Please help me. Please free me from this prison. By doing so, you will not only gain the spiritual merit, but you will also basically, here's the 5,000 gold coins. You will also gain material benefit." And Sanatana was very expert in diplomacy, and he could actually read the mind of, you know, jailkeeper. So the jailkeeper said, "My dear sir, I would love to help you, but I'm afraid of the government. What they're going to do to me? You know, they're going to put me in a jail." And Sanatan said, "Oh, don't worry. Nawab has left south to Orissa. He's not here. And once you release me, I'm not going to stay in this country. I'm going to become mendicant. And I'm going to go to the holy place of Mecca. So you don't need to worry. If Nawab asks what happened to me, you just say, you know, he went to Ganji to pass the stool. And when he saw the Ganji, he just jumped in and he drowned because he had, you know, heavy metal, you know, shackles on his arms and his legs. So he just drowned. He disappeared." So in that way, Nawab is not going to question you much. And seeing that this jailkeeper was still a little bit in dilemma, then Sanatan said, "Here's the 7,000 gold coins." You know, expert negotiations. So at that point, the jailkeeper was very much inclined to do, you know, what Sanatan was asking him. So he let him free. And Sanatan basically escaped that night. And he went not on a public road, but he was walking through the, you know, very, very treacherous paths and through the forest and everything, so on. Till after many, many days, he came to Varanasi, where he heard Mahaprabhu was there. And if you look on the map, I was actually Googling last night, you know, how far is Ramakeli to Varanasi? It's a long, long, long way. And, you know, back then, you don't just, you know, hop on a train and you go, you know, walking, it took many, many days. So again, can you imagine what kind of fate one has to have to go through all that? To be in a prison, to go through the jungles, to walk for so many days with no food, no proper shelter, to finally arrive at Mahaprabhu's doorsteps. So it was at the house of Chandrasekhar, basically, that Mahaprabhu was staying at that time. And just imagine the humility of Sanatan Goswami. He arrives at Chandrasekhar's house and he doesn't, "Hello, here I am." No, he's so humble. He's so humble. Basically, he just sits on the doorstep. He only sits there humbly waiting on the doorsteps. He doesn't even go inside. But Mahaprabhu, of course, being the super soul in the hearts of all living beings, he understood what's happening. And he told Chandrasekhar, Chandrasekhar, go look outside the house. There is a saintly person out there. And Chandrasekhar comes out and he looks and he sees, like, you know, one beggar looks like kind of dirty and torn clothes. And he said, my lord, there is no saintly devotees here. Just I see one Muslim mendicant. And Mahaprabhu smiled and he said, bring him in. Bring him in. So I wanted to share, you know, this beautiful story because it just shows, number one, what the faith, true faith is, and great humility of devotee. So later on, as we know, Mahaprabhu, he instructed Sanatana for 2 months continuously. And all these instructions, as we know, Arupa and Sanatana, they are manjaris from the spiritual world. So of course they know these things, but these instructions are more for us, for all the generations of devotees that will come later on. So therefore these verses are very, very important to study and kind of dive deeply and actually try to understand the message. I will stop here. There's of course much more one can say, but let's end here. If anybody would like to offer any comment or any question, yes, Madhura Gavatnika. Yes.
I appreciate your transcendental vision of the homeless man holding the sign down and out. That was quite nice. I thought, though, Devahuti, as she was expressing her desire and her frustration, it sounded like she has learned from experience, actually. Mm-hmm. Although, despite her opulent life, I'm thinking she must not have obviously experienced real shelter where she can rest, you know, because she was still restless, like the birds. They're fearful. They're just looking everywhere for who's gonna come and predator, whatever. So I thought, even though she has everything anyone would want, and materially, she just still was shelterless, felt without shelter.
Mm. Exactly. Very good question. Because I was thinking, like, personality like Devahuti, she was never, you know, engaged in any kind of sinful activities or anything like that. There was no suffering in her life. I mean, she was princess of Swayambhuva Manu. Still, because of her great learning, great intelligence, she understood that all these material facilities, I mean, it's described that Kardama Muni, at one point, he created the flying palace. You know, nowadays we think, like, you know, we have, you know, nice homes, but he actually created flying palace. It was like seven-story palace that was able to travel around the universe. So materially, all facilities were there. And like you said, she still could understand that none of that really matters because the true shelter is the Lord's lotus feet. And therefore, she is saying, my Lord, I have obtained you after many, many, many births. She's saying that to Kapiladev. So she's so intelligent that she realizes, first of all, she was married to great devotee Kardama Muni, and secondly, her own son is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So she is understanding this is the such a unique opportunity that after many births, finally, I can get free from this material existence. And she would not miss that opportunity. So in a similar way, we should also be convinced that after many, many births, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and devotees, we are also given very similar opportunity. So we should not miss it by any chance. Take it seriously. Anybody else would like to say something? Yes, I think there is.
Thank you so much for your class, very enlightening. It just made me think about Sanatana Goswami going for months and days to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the determination he had, and I just came driving a car here to see Gauranithai and Radha Syamasundar. That we Prabhupada gave us such a luxury, no? He gave us the red carpet feeling of being able to, with little endeavor, not a lot of endeavor, and still I don't come every day. So it made me, I thought it was a good for me to listen to the facilities that Prabhupada gave us and the endeavor that really needs to happen. And for us, even when sometimes a small endeavor, we don't do it. So anyway, it was a reflection. Thank you so much. Another question. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Yes. Prabhupada is like a perfect physician. He knows exactly what dose of medicine to prescribe. And that is exactly the process that he gave us. Yes, Mataji.
Yeah, 7 years, you know, in the States anyway, growing up in the 50s and 60s, you know, especially after the Great Depression, it seems like in my home I was taught to have faith in Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. You know, to believe in Santa Claus, and you ask for, you know, something and you get it on this, you know, magical day, right? So, but when I realized that there wasn't, you know, such a personality, or, you know, my father was the one providing, it shifted dramatically, you know, my thought processes in, okay, well, how is my mother and father guiding me? What are they getting me to believe in? And actually, it was like a pivotal point where I, you know, kind of elevated my consciousness a little bit to go a little higher than this personality called Santa Claus, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you know, so it's a matter of who are we taught to put our faith in, right? And so, yeah, I was very fortunate that at some point in this life I was, you know, able to take shelter of even just the word God, even before I had the name or was given this, you know, personal name of Krishna, you know. But so, yeah.
Thank you. That is also so important. And like you said, the one thing that is so essential in our life is the faith. And unfortunately, in material world, quite often, because of the circumstances, we are led in the wrong direction. So sometimes the conditioned soul doesn't even know who to trust. So therefore, it is the greatest gift that one can do is to actually give faith or encourage someone's faith in God. And it's also the greatest injury to actually diminish somebody's faith in spiritual life. So even in our own dealings among the Vaishnavas, we have to be very careful never by any means or any inattentive words diminish somebody's faith, because it's such a sensitive thing. Did somebody else? Yes, Prabhu.
What was driving Sanatana's faith? Like, why did he feel so strongly about? I mean, was it just meeting Chaitanya, or?
Um,
What was driving Sanatana's his faith? Why did he walk so many miles? Why did he want to escape prison? Why did he want to leave his government job? What was his impetus other than, you know, like he believes in God?
Yeah. So basically, if we look, you know, more in full picture, the life of Sanatana Rupa, they were born in very exalted Brahmanical families. And they were so learned, so intelligent, that basically all the local people, they respected them hugely. To the point that Nawab actually, recognizing their greatness, their learning, their expertise, he realized, if these two are in my government service, essentially then I will be able to easily manage the entire country, because everybody respected these two personalities. So Nawab was intelligent too. Rupa and Sanatan, of course, they're not ordinary persons. They are actually Manjaris, Rupa Manjari and Ananga Manjari, is it Sanatan? I may be wrong. But they are actually Manjaris from the spiritual world. So they are eternal associates of the Lord. And basically, even though they were engaged in Nawab's service for many years, that was not really their true aspiration. They wanted to be with the Lord. They wanted to be engaged in his service fully. Therefore, they were writing to Mahaprabhu, asking him to please rescue them and looking for any opportunity to actually join him. I'm not sure if I'm answering fully your question, but the circumstances were such that there were so many tests. You can see that Sanatana was thrown in a prison, and there was really no other way other than to walk for many, many miles to actually reach the company of the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But you can find more in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's really beautifully described. First, how Rupa and Sanatan, they initially meet Mahaprabhu in Ramakeli, and then later on how they actually plan on escaping. So one thing for sure we can learn, that in similar way we should also use our intelligence to find a way to surrender our life to the Lord as well, in any way we can. Okay, I think that's all we have. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.